Support for Jazzed About Work comes from Ohio University's online master's degree in sustainability, security, and resilience. Does your organization or community have a workable plan for when a catastrophe strikes? This 18-month online degree program will give you the skills you need to prepare for, respond to, and recover from natural disasters and other crises. Participants earn 3 stackable certificates in community risk and resilience, change management and leadership, and planning resilient systems, leading to a full master's degree. Students learn cutting-edge skills in sustainability assessment and entrepreneurship, sustainable agriculture, energy policy, and more. This is an exciting, growing field, and no GRE test is required to apply. For more information, follow the link in the description on this podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Jazzed About Work, where we talk about everything that might have an impact on your career. I'm your host, Bev Jones. I'm an executive coach, and I know that an issue with many of my clients is how to manage stress. When your job is too stressful, it's hard to enjoy the rest of your life, and it's also difficult to do your best at work. This is the first of 2 episodes where we're talking about how, if you're stressed out, you are not creative, you're not good at solving problems, and it's harder for you to get along with other people. The good news is that our guest, Gail Williams-Byers, says there are many ways to reduce stress. 2 years ago, after 11 years in her Ohio courtroom, Judge Gail retired from her role on the bench. Now, as a fellow with the National Judicial College, one of the things Judge Gail is doing is teaching other judges. And in addition to creating courses about legal issues, she teaches judges about how to deal with stress. Being a judge is a very difficult job, and stressed out judges don't make their best decisions. So Judge Gail talks about mindfulness and how it can calm stress, enhance decision making, and change how we do our work and get through life. In this episode, Judge Gail will talk about how mindfulness can reduce stress and about ways you can start to become more mindful. In our next episode, she'll share easy mindfulness techniques that might change your life. Gail, welcome back to Jazzed About Work. It is always fun and interesting and educational to have you here.
Bev, thank you so much for having me. I'm always excited when I receive an invitation to return to talk to you about some of the fun discoveries and developments in this journey we call life.
Well, you have particularly interesting paths, I think, in this journey, and I always like to hear what you're up to. But today we're going to focus a little bit more on how-to kinds of things, because you've taken an interesting turn. As a judicial fellow, I know that you teach judges about matters of law, you know, latest trends and things like that. But increasingly in your role, you have been teaching judges about taking care of themselves. And today I'd like to really get a little bit more into the details of the kind of mindfulness techniques that you're teaching. Does that sound like a good thing to start on?
Oh, this sounds like an awesome place to start and to launch from, Bev, because there's so much great information, not just for judges, but for individuals who are just living their best life every day, because these concepts are applicable no matter what station in life you find yourself in.
Well, that is absolutely right. I'm kind of interested in how to manage stress for judges, because they have such difficult jobs. I mean, there are a lot of stressful jobs out there, but judges are kind of like, it's like a three-ring circus. They're kind of running what's going on in the courtroom, but at the same time, they're trying to control things and lead people. They have to think really carefully, which requires listening carefully. It feels like a lot's going on. So I think if you're having an impact on helping judges to be more mindful and less stressed, then whatever they're learning to do, the rest of us could benefit from. But it is a really hard thing, isn't it, to be the judge in a courtroom?
Oh, amazingly difficult. But, you know, I really like your characterization of it being a bit of a three-ring circus, not to diminish the importance of what's actually happening in the courtroom. But what you just described is actually right on balance with what happens often in the courtroom. I would have generally referred to judges as kind of the human thermostat in the room, right? There are all kinds of things going on, and there are all kinds of folks that are coming in at varying levels of anxiety or emotional states. And the judge is pretty much the one that often kind of sets the tone and the temperature. But if that human thermostat is out of whack, then you can almost guarantee that everything else in the room is going to respond to that. If the judge is running hot or cold, then you know what? The room is going to expand to those extremes. It's not uncommon to have either litigants or even attorneys to walk in and they'll ask maybe the support staff, hey, how's the judge doing today? Or, you know, is the judge feeling okay today? Because it helps them to kind of figure out, you know, how are we going to approach something that may be difficult and challenging? And for judges, they really are, just as you said, really responsible for keeping their mind on the task at hand and not allowing a lot of those other outside influences to affect them. But the truth is that it does. And judicial well-being and mindfulness, believe it or not, Bev, is one of the top trending course requests for the National Judicial College right now, far and away. Judges are asking more and more to have help in balancing all of those responsibilities. So this topic couldn't be more timely.
And that really is progress, I think. When I think you and I did one of the very first programs at the National Convention of Judges like 6 years ago about well-being and taking care of yourself. And it at the time, it seemed like kind of an odd thing. But now it feels like managing stress in order to manage yourself and manage your decision making has really become mainstream.
You are so, yeah, you're so right. It has become 6 or 7 years ago when we were in that room together and you were teaching about the importance of exercise, eating well, resting, managing stress levels, and being able to kind of leave things where they are and return to it at another time and focus on specific tasks as they are, you know, talking about that whole definition of mindfulness and what the techniques are that carry along with it. I remember looking in that room and you had the folks that were there, which it wasn't overflowing, but there was a really good attendance. But you had some folks who were like scratching their heads because they'd never heard of this and they didn't know what to do with this information. Because after all, when we talked about this all those years ago, we also talked about it in the realm of judges kind of having this invisible expectation from society that they can take on all of this information and even some of the secondary trauma that's experienced and have no effect or impact. And we know that that's not correct. We know that that's not realistic. And we do know that we need to provide them with additional tools to deal with a lot of what they are handling. So you are absolutely, your memory's perfect in this regard. It is exactly what happened.
Well, let me interrupt for a second here. And, emphasize something that you said. What's good for judges is good for the rest of us because we are all in similar situations. They're just in an extreme version. But one thing that is true for all of us is just like the leader in a courtroom, the judge, can impact the emotion, the physical sense of stress for everybody in the room because stress is contagious. That happens for leaders everywhere. And this works backwards. And as you said, judges can be traumatized by being in an environment where other people are struggling with trauma. And I want to emphasize that it is possible if you're in a job, whether you're a doctor or a fireman or whatever it is you are, you can suffer from the trauma of the people you're working with. And that's a big deal, isn't it?
Oh, it's a huge deal. And for those same professions and same individuals that you just named, think about how many times in society we don't often provide them license, if you will, or agency to have those traumatic experiences and to work through them. For perhaps nurses that experienced having to hold the hands of patients who passed away during the height of the pandemic, not having the ability to see their families. That's a form of a trauma. And these traumas have triggers. And believe it or not, even for judges, when they experience these cases in their courtrooms, sometimes this isn't the only universe of their experience, meaning they may have had some kind of exchange or engagement in their life that reminds them of this situation. And so that's layered upon layered, or this is kind of layered trauma. And this is the kind of thing that if you had those experiences, it can cause you to not even focus on what's happening right now. So when we talk about mindfulness, if we can just talk about what the definition of it is, or as I see it, mindfulness requires the person practicing it to actually use what we like to say is a set of attention-based and self-inquiring regimens that are cultivated over time. And it is designed to allow you to focus on where you are in the moment. It's really easy for the mind to switch gears and to go to other places, but it's a mental state that you achieve by focusing on your awareness in the moment. You calmly acknowledge and accept your feelings or your thoughts about what's happening, including bodily sensations, and you can use therapeutic techniques. Even for some of the toughest, most challenging situations, there are some techniques that I hope we'll have a chance to talk about, if not now, then later, about how you can get through some of the experiences, because sometimes traumatic experiences do have physical manifestations. And just like we can see someone when they're stressed or in duress, you can tell or you can feel from your body when you are not focused, when you are experiencing some kind of reaction and you're having some kind of bodily sensation to what's going on around you. And mindfulness and mindfulness techniques help you to re-engage so that you can actually focus on the task at hand.
So one of the things we've talked about a couple of times here on Jazzed About Work is how one of the things that happens in a stressful environment is that we can be hijacked. Our brains can be hijacked. Ourselves can be hijacked by what's going on. And we sort of get out of the mode where we make good decisions and we can be focused on what's happening. And we find that what some people call the lizard brain, the old part of our brain, the fight or flight part of the brain takes over. And really, when we are in fight or flight mode, the calm, creative, innovative, compassionate parts of our processing are not accessible. So one of the things that mindfulness techniques can do can help make it less likely that we're going to be hijacked, right, by the lizard brain, or more likely that we're going to be able to pause and get back to a calmer state. Is that part of what you're teaching?
Oh, absolutely. And also this, in teaching that, it also helps judges, and or anyone for that matter, to kind of understand why they've reacted or responded in the manner that they did in the moment. So often when we reflect on situations or circumstances, we're, you know, looking at it from a certain perspective. But when you think about that lizard brain that you just described, or that we all have, It is the one that is just kind of evocative of that natural emotion or that natural response. If something happens and it's a trigger, then you naturally know that you feel a certain way about it. And without even thinking, you just respond to it and you don't even give it a second thought. And you're absolutely right. That part of the brain acts and responds a lot quicker than the cerebral cortex part of the brain, or the part that allows you to sort of rationalize and reason and slow down and consider the alternatives, or what I like to say is play the tape all the way through, meaning figure out how you want to respond, but think about what that's going to mean in the end.
So what are some of the ways that you teach judges to start to become more mindful, some of the techniques for building mindfulness into their lives, if they're just starting from scratch, if they're just starting to think about these things and wanting to take control of their stress level? Where do you have them begin?
Well, I like to begin first with building context around what mindfulness is and connecting it as closely as possible to an experience that someone's had. And for judges, I already know that there are few, if any, that are either on the bench or previously been on the bench or as even aspiring to the bench that haven't had at least one triggering experience in their life or their career that they can instantly recall. But you know what? They don't even know why they can instantly recall it. They're not sure why. If you mention it, it's the first thing that comes to mind. So I like to put that experience in context and give them a moment to really think about it. And anytime I ask that question about, you know, tell me about that experience and why you instantly recall it, I more often than not have the experience of almost the whole room wanting to participate to explain why they remember it. And I also ask, how did you feel about it? And they'll easily explain kind of the topical emotions. But then we talk about how, again, how the lizard brain may have taken over and reacted without giving the rest of the brain the opportunity to just calm you down and to get you reasonably and rationally through it. But then we talk about practical methods of what you can do in the moment, because you're going to have those moments again. And so I think we've talked before about what I call the stop method, which is, I think, really priceless for judges and for any individual who's in a decision-making capacity. When you have those experiences and you feel like that lizard brain has taken over, the best thing you can do is hit the pause button, literally stop. And stop just means the S is for stop. The T is for take a breath. That actually helps to regulate your heart rate, keep your blood pressure from going through the roof, and gives you that moment of pause and peace, again, to become more aware of where you are and your immediate surroundings. Observe. So take in what's going on around you and then proceed. So S is for stop. T is for take a break or breath. O is for observe. P is for proceed. And no one even has to know that you're doing this, which is another magical thing about the stop method. No one knows you're doing it. And you come across as someone highly rationalized after you've just given yourself that moment to really, really calm down.
So you've made a couple of really important points there. One is that once you notice that you're hijacked, first, it's great if you notice and you train yourself for noticing that this is how I feel when I know I'm kind of not in my deep, wise place. Once you notice that you're being hijacked, having tools that can help you step out of it as quickly as possible, wherever you are in life, that's a really good thing. And this is a really good basic tool. For some people, just doing 5 deep breaths can help. It might be that different people like different ways of saying it, but this is a starting point, isn't it? Learning that you can exercise control and take back your ability to help set your stress level. So that's a big thing for people to learn at the beginning of a mindfulness path.
Oh, absolutely. And remember that most people believe that when they are in the vortex of that experience, the natural inclination is to do something about it, right? If it's something that's heightened your emotions or your sensitivities, you want to respond and you want to, you know, and respond in a, you know, equally perhaps vociferous manner. When it's actually the reverse that works best, as opposed to doing something, taking that step back that you just said. And so don't do something. Actually, just hold tight, stay there, and collect yourself and your thoughts, and then proceed, because it also leads to less regret when it's over.
Yeah, and learning to pause is a really big thing. Well, as you said a bit ago, mindfulness isn't just about being able to pull yourself from the brink when you're already hijacked. Mindfulness is finding that you're less likely to reach that stage, and you're more likely to be in an aware, calm mode, right, kind of throughout your day, or at least as much as possible. When you talk in your talks with judges and others, what are some of the suggestions that you make, maybe based on your own experience, for cultivating mindfulness, for building habits around mindfulness? Where do you begin?
Well, I like to think that we begin by, you know, assessing, again, some of those practical tools that can easily be deployed. One thing that I think can really challenge or make someone anxious about whether or not this is the kind of lifestyle change, because it is a bit of a lifestyle change. It can, when you are consciously aware of what's going on and you're practicing mindfulness, you're doing this in every aspect of your life, not just when you put that robe on and you take the bench, but you're doing it when you're engaging with your neighbors, your friends, the clerk at the grocery store, or the person in front of you who's decided to fill their cart up but, you know, forgot their form of payment. So you're really working through these things actually regularly. And so I like to give people tools that I think can be used, again, in a lot of different environments. Another one is, you know, for someone like me who loves to engage in conversation, and I always have a response for just about everything. One of the things I had to learn is to hold off and to wait to respond when there's something that's said, and I may identify that as a trigger. And so I've learned this wait process, which is, why am I talking? Am I saying something because, again, that's my lizard brain taking over that says, hey, you got to respond. You got to say something. You can't let that go. Or is it that I need to just listen to myself breathing, take a moment, and then decide if whatever I'm going to say is even worth saying? Because there are some times when you can really regret it, even as judges. And so you need to think before you speak. You need to think about what you're going to say. Is it necessary that you say it? Is it something that's been thought about? Is it kind? Is it intelligent? Is it honest? If they are not, then again, as a practical tool, it's okay to wait, and it's okay to pass on even saying anything, because again, it just because it's thought of doesn't mean it's necessary to be spoken. And that's what I think we start off as, sort of a baseline in talking to judges, which is difficult when you are the commander of the room, right? It's hard when yeah, by the very power of your words, you can change the trajectory of someone's life with the pronouncement of your words. And yet you're telling these same people, you know what? Take a beat and wait and ask yourself, why am I talking? It seems like
that's really good. Yeah, I think that's a really good point for judges, but also leaders of all sorts. When we work with leaders on emotional intelligence, a lot of it is learning to notice that you're talking when it might be better to be listening. I think leaders feel the default for what they should be doing, whether they have anything to say or not, is to keep talking, and recognizing that it's a choice, not a necessity to be talking all the time, is a huge part of leadership, isn't it?
It is you are truer words never spoken. It is so very true, because you're right. Leaders, I think, in so many instances feel compelled to speak. They feel compelled to fill the room with their knowledge and their experience, because after all, not everybody's been tapped to be a leader. And so when you're in that position and all eyes are on you, which comes with a certain expectation, then of course what should follow, or at least what we've been told and we've been trained to believe, is what should follow are thoughtful words, or just words, whether they're thoughtful or not. When the truth of the matter is, it's okay to rest in silence while you listen and you take in what is going on around you, and then decide whether or not your response is necessary. And even if it is necessary, how do you best frame that response so that the recipient receives it the way that you intended? Because if you let that lizard brain take over, or if you just react or respond reflexively, then more likely than not, you'll get a point across. It just may not be the one that you had intended. And so leaders often find themselves rephrasing, or let me say this way, or let me put it to you this way, or I didn't mean it to come out that way. A brief pause would perhaps have cured that.
It's easier to learn to pause and not talk and to really focus on other people. If you develop the habit of kind of taking care of your state of mind, of sort of the mindfulness techniques that we can learn can help us become more aware of what's going on and more likely to stay cool and to sort of notice and not jump into that hijacked place in the first place. If you're willing, I'd like you to come back another time and maybe talk about some of the ways to build mindfulness in a little more detail, like a part two of this conversation we're having today. But before we finish, can you just tell us a little bit about not what you're teaching other people, but what has worked for you? You have learned the power of mindfulness, and you've learned to become more mindful, and we've got tools that you use to stop yourself when you're at the brink. But how is it that you just maintain a lower level of stress now?
So first I'll say I would absolutely welcome a continued conversation about this. Mindfulness and judicial well-being is actually one of my favorite subjects to teach. And now, whether it's to judges or to general audiences of leaders, I absolutely love teaching this skilled course because I think it has such deep importance and I take it personally. And so when you talk about, continuing this, kind of behavior, this lifestyle change, you are so correct, Bev, in saying that this is something you have to kind of commit to and recommit even when you kind of fall off the wagon for a while. So I nurture my mindfulness experience through breathing exercises, again, understanding and acknowledging triggers. I know that there are certain things in life that might trigger a certain response for me. And because I am courageous now enough to acknowledge what those are, I can now guard against them when something may occur that seems to come a little too close to that line. But then there are other things that are so helpful. I have devices throughout my home, Alexa devices throughout my home. And so many people now have them in whether it's Alexa or Google or any other platform, and you can actually ask for what's called a mindfulness minute, which will give you the opportunity to do some guided meditation. for just 1 minute to help resettle you and refocus you. I believe in that. I believe in therapeutic intervention because I believe everyone needs healthy outlets, healthy objective outlets to help to better understand different perspectives, even in the same situation. But one thing I'll tell you, I have become very, very committed to, which is protecting my peace. I am extremely conscientious of the things that might disturb a peaceful surrounding for me. And I am very aggressive about protecting it and not ceding any ground to anyone under any circumstances where the disturbance of that peace will cause me harm. Now, there was a time when I would happily do that.
Give me an example of how you recently have protected your peace. What does it take?
Your timing is so perfect. So I had an experience actually just yesterday where a colleague of mine texted me an article that was written in a certain media outlet. And I just generally read the message, but I didn't hit the link. And for me, that's necessary. So I called this colleague actually just this morning and I said, hey, I just wanted to tell you I got what you sent me, but I didn't read the attachment because my view of this particular outlet is really poor based on my own experience. And I have committed to not engaging anything that is printed or posted from this source ever again, if I can help it. If I know that's where it came from, I will not engage it. And so it's nothing against you. I did not read it because that is a trigger for me. But I just wanted you to know that that's got no bearing on you and I. And she was very appreciative of that. But I knew that even engaging that might disturb my peace in some small way. And I'm not willing to do it for anyone.
Okay, you're serious about this. So here's what I'd like to do. This is part one. And I will like to get together soon. And in part two, I'd like to go through kind of a library of possible techniques that people can use to kind of build mindfulness into their lives. This is just one example, and have a real how-to discussion in when we get together again, okay?
I so look forward to it. I am excited to continue this conversation. It's so fun, but it's also so helpful, and I hope your listeners appreciate this and you as much as I do.
Thanks, Gail. We'll be talking soon.
Indeed. Thank you, Bev.
Today we've been talking with Judge Gail Williams-Byers about how to enhance your career by cultivating mindfulness and managing stress. This podcast is produced by WOUB Public Media. Adam Rich is our audio engineer. I'm your host, Beverly Jones, author of Find Your Happy at Work. And our sponsor is the Voinovich School of Leadership and Public Service at Ohio University. Today's tip is that there are many simple ways to reduce your workplace stress, and becoming more familiar with mindfulness is a good way to start. Thanks for listening to Jazzed About Work. Please come back soon.